Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Good evening. Today is December 15th, 2021. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 35,927, the NASDAQ at 15,565, and the S&P at 4,709. Our topic tonight is last-minute year-end tax tips, planning for next year and getting ready for your tax filing. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Eric, and he will write it down, and they will get the question to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So let's talk about some last-minute year-end tax tips. So I have kind of like a bit of a laundry list. It may not cover everything that we might be doing because we also only have 2 weeks left. So we're running out of time a little bit, but there still could be some tax year-end tax changes that you may be able to do. So, for example, if you still have a paycheck left before year-end, some people might have a paycheck hitting Friday, maybe the last Friday of the month, although that would be the holiday this year, so it could be the day before that. There could be a chance that you still may be able to make a little change, for example, to a 401k contribution. So if you have an employer plan through work and maybe you didn't maximize your 401k and you have a little bit of more wiggle room there and you have the means to do so, meaning you can afford not to have a bigger paycheck, you could increase that year-end 401k contribution maybe to get a little bit more tax deferral and a little bit more saving into your retirement account. So not a lot of room left to do that, but you could be one of those people that do have that available, and or some people get paid once a month, and you really would have a much greater opportunity to be able to do that. Now, one thing that people often talk about at year-end as a tax planning tip is tax loss harvesting, or like I like to think about, you could also do some tax gain harvesting. So if you're in a low tax bracket, for example, you might want to actually review your portfolio to see if you could trim off some of the gains that you have, whereby you might be in a 0% tax bracket. So this could be a year you might want to recognize some gains. Or if you have capital loss carryovers. What I mean by that is if in prior years you might have sold some capital assets, some investments that you had a loss on, if that loss exceeds your gains, the IRS allows us to take $3,000 against ordinary income. And if we have losses that exceed that $3,000 or exceed our gains, beyond the 3,000, then we can carry that forward indefinitely until we use it up. And we use it up by first offsetting against other gains. If not using against other gains, we can use it against that $3,000 loss they allow us against ordinary income on page one of our return, and then carry forward indefinitely. So review your year-end investments, look at your tax return from the prior year, try to understand what tax bracket you might be in, and if it's worthwhile to maybe harvest gains. Be very, very careful, though, if you're someone who thinks, oh, I'll harvest these gains, and you might have other income or page one income that could be impacted by these gains you harvest. Just be careful that it's not throwing you into another tax bracket or causing more Social Security to be taxable or throwing you out of, let's say, qualifying for that stimulus payment that you may not have qualified for prior. So just be careful of any changes that you might include on your return, what it's going to do at this last-minute tax planning. So the big thing is tax loss harvesting. So in tax loss harvesting, that's usually where we look at our portfolio and say, are there some losses we can take? And this could be even on, you know, investments or positions that you like and that you want to continue to hold, but there might be a current loss on it. Now, you have to be careful on these because the IRS won't let you take the loss and buy it right back the next day. They call that a wash sale rule, and it has to be 31 days out, 31 days before, 31 days after, when you're trying to harvest losses. So typically what we see is you make a note on your calendar, buy back that position if you really believe in it in 31 days, or if you sell something to take that loss, harvest that loss, you could buy some other position that may be comparable to it, not the exact same position. So that's tax loss harvesting, and quite often you do see people doing that at year end. Now, I will say that, you know, we're not finding a lot of losses. The markets have done very well in recent years, so there's not always a lot of losses to, you know, find. And typically, keep this in mind for people who might not, you know, understand how all this works. This is really in either your individual or joint account, what we'll call your brokerage account. It does not do you any good to harvest losses in an IRA or something like that because those transactions aren't reportable. You only report transactions in IRAs when you take a distribution from them. So tax loss harvesting, or as I said, tax gain harvesting, typically in your brokerage account, you know, joint or individual accounts. So those are kind of the big last-minute items we typically kind of think about in tax losses or tax gain harvesting. There are also some opportunities if you haven't taken your required minimum distribution for those people who have IRAs, who have reached required minimum distribution age, which in the past was 70 and a half and is now age 72, you have to go ahead and make sure you take your required minimum distribution. And you have an opportunity here, again, if you're age 70 and a half, if let's pretend you don't need that required minimum distribution, you could actually make it to a charity. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. So you could say, gosh, maybe I don't need that whole required minimum distribution. You still might have time, and typically this is on a best efforts treatment at this point of the year, best efforts by a custodian to get out those qualified charitable distributions as part of your required minimum distribution. You'd probably have to jump on that like right away to make that happen. Folks, we will talk more about some last-minute year-end tax tips when we come back from our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Shelley Heaver, co-host of Hidden Charms, WDIY's members make everything you hear on Lehigh Valley Public Radio possible. Larry from Mukunji recently renewed his membership, and he said, "I love Hidden Charms, all Reed Street and folk classics." Thanks for listening, Larry. You can show your support for your favorite programs by becoming a member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at wdiy.org under Public Affairs and on most streaming apps and our own WDIY app. So tonight we are talking about last-minute year-end tax tips, planning for next year, and getting ready for your tax filings. So we have talked a bit about, you know, maybe increasing 401k contributions at the last minute. We've talked about tax loss harvesting or even tax gain harvesting. If it makes sense for you to take gains this year, maybe you're in a really low tax bracket and you won't be in the next year, so you want to think about that from both sides. And then lastly, where I left off prior to the break, was talking about required minimum distributions for people who were 70 and a half or older, whether it's a IRA that you yourself have or an inherited IRA, as long as you're age 70 and a half, at least age 70 and a half, not a day younger, you can funnel some of your required minimum distribution or all of your required minimum distribution, but not more than $100,000, to your favorite charity. You have to work with your custodian. They write the check directly to the charity, and then you deliver it. You have to be really quick to get that done. It really is best efforts for the most part this time of year. But keep that in mind. It could be an option for you. Let's see, what else did I want to? I think that's probably all about that on age 70 and a half. You might want to think about doing this for next year if you hadn't already thought about it or if it's too late to the game to do it this year. I've seen too many people make charitable contributions out of their bank account and then take out these, you know, huge required minimum distributions that they're paying 100% tax on because maybe they're not itemizing. And by doing the QCD, the Qualified Charitable Distribution, you reduce the income on page one of your return, and that can have compounding effects in other ways. So if it is something that you find you are charitably inclined and that you are not currently doing it, but you qualify for it, really think about doing this for next year. And I have people who want their required minimum distribution first thing January, you know, of the new year. Well, then you don't really have the same kind of opportunity or planning opportunity if you do decide to do something like this. That's why you want to think about it now if you haven't done it previously. Other charitable giving that we can still plan for and do before year end, and that includes, you know, contributing or supporting your local member, NPR member station, WDIY. We can do $300 above the line charitable contribution. That's monetary charitable giving that we are allowed because of the CARES Act, above the line deduction of $300 or $600 if you're married filing joint. That is monetary donations to your favorite 501c3. We get to take an above the line deduction. What we mean by above the line, it means before we do our standard deduction. So it's an above the line deduction. It means we're not itemizing, and we get to take that against our page one income. So that's a nice little benefit for 2020 and 2021. If you are itemizing, keep in mind that another provision under the CARES Act was to allow monetary donations equivalent to page one of your tax return. Normally, charitable giving in cash donations or cash-like donations are limited to 60% of page one of your income. But under the CARES Act, we get 100% deduction. You have to make sure you elect 100% limitation of page one. That's for people who are seriously charitably inclined. We're talking quite large donations in that instance, but it is a nice benefit for people who are trying to really fulfill some philanthropy in these times of great need. So that is a very nice deduction. And that is something that is very easy to do before year-end, cash donations. It does get a little bit more complicated to make donations of appreciated securities this close to the end of the year. Again, it could be best efforts, so you don't want to miss out on it. But you can also make donations to your favorite 501c3 with appreciated securities. What that means is you've held them long-term, and you have a gain on it. And maybe you really would have liked to sell this particular stock, but you didn't want to take the gain on your tax return for whatever reason, but you've been wanting to kind of get rid of it. Well, you can make a donation of appreciated securities to your favorite charity. You have to make sure that they can accept it, and typically they do. They'll have their own brokerage account. You have to get that information. You work with your custodian, and you can make an in-kind transfer of that appreciated security to your favorite charity. Now, there is a different limitation on that. That limitation is limited to 30% of your page one income. And again, typically people do fall within these ranges unless you're doing really large charitable giving. What you're also saving, so if you do it and you're above the standard deduction, then you get to itemize. You have to report that on a special form called 8283, and that flows through to your Schedule A if you are itemizing. The other benefit of that is that you don't have to pay capital gains tax on the appreciation. So that is an added benefit. If you itemize and you get some deduction off your income, you know, in excess of the standard deduction, that's a savings. Plus, you don't have to report the gain for federal purposes. Plus, you don't have to report the gain for state purposes. That has that's a gift that keeps on giving in a number of ways to your favorite charity and to you in tax savings. So just be aware of those limitations, though. If for any reason you do charitable giving that is capped, that's limited because of these restrictions I explained, 100% on the cash, which this year doesn't matter, but in future years, if it goes back down to 60%, you might be capped, or the cap of 30% on appreciated securities. If you ever are limited on your charitable giving, the excess charitable deduction can carry forward to future years for up to 5 years. So that's quite nice. You don't totally lose it. You can carry it forward for 5 years, so keep that in mind. So a number of ways of giving this year that we've talked about, and some that you still may be able to do at this last, you know, couple weeks if you jump on it right away. We've talked about the required minimum distribution, if you're 70 and a half at least, using the qualified charitable distribution, monetary donations of $300 or $600 Marion filing joint above the line, or if you are itemizing, maybe using appreciated securities. So a number of ways to do some last-minute giving, some last-minute tax tips. And when we come back from our next break, we are going to continue talking about some last-minute year-end tax tips, and then we will talk about some items to think about for next year and some last-minute items you can still do for 2021 in 2022. So we'll talk about those in just a moment. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about some last-minute year-end tax tips, planning for next year, and, of course, getting ready for your tax filings. Sounds too soon, and who wants to think about this, during the holiday season? But we do still have to live responsibly and take care of some of these things, and it'll help you hopefully, you know, have more funds and to fund your gift giving at this time of year. So some items that we just talked about was some charitable giving. Let's talk about a few other things. For those folks who are self-employed, if you do not have your own retirement account, you still can do so. And in fact, probably should. If you are self-employed and you have a decent amount of earnings, you can set up a retirement account for yourself. So quite often we're used to people having employer-provided plans. Typically when we're working, our employers might have a retirement plan that we could participate in. If we are employees and our employer does not offer an employer plan, such as a 401k or a simple, we can set up our own individual retirement account. It's called typically a traditional IRA, or we can set up something called a Roth IRA. What many self-employed people might not realize is that you actually could set up what's called a solo 401k. And in that effort, you actually have the opportunity to put away more money than you otherwise would be able to, either as using a traditional IRA, Roth IRA, or even as an employee, as a participant in an employer plan. When you are self-employed, you have the opportunity to put money into your own retirement account using what we call the employee contribution, which has the same limits that we as employees can put in, which is $19,500, or if we are over age 50 or older, we can put in an extra $6,500. So for people 50 and older, can put into a 401k or a 403b $26,000. Well, if I'm self-employed and I have significant income, that is a nice deduction that I can do, but only if I have, like, for example, a self-employed retirement account, such as a 401k. So you can have a solo 401k. But remember, you heard me say, but self-employed people can put away even more. How do they do that? Well, you can have a profit-sharing piece on your solo 401k. You can do your employee portion, and then you can do an employer profit-sharing portion, which is typically about 20% of your profit. Now, there is a cap on this. I believe it's about $58,000. They're not going to let you do a combination of more than $58,000 to the solo 401k between the employee portion and the employer portion. But for those people who are, you know, really quite successful as self-employed people, this is a great opportunity. Now, for people who are a little bit older, like 55 or older, who are self-employed, you may also be eligible for a defined benefit plan, which is like a pension. Now, that's a little bit more complicated, and I won't get into all of that tonight, but that is also something to think about. Now, typically, you want to have consistent income, typically high income. This isn't, you know, for people who are just doing some kind of small on-the-side business, but lots of opportunities, but you don't always know to ask about them. If you're not aware of these types of situations, you get caught up when you're self-employed. You get caught up in your business and taking care of business as you should, but you also have to pause and make sure you're taking care of yourself in your own retirement, especially for self-employed people, because nobody else is doing that for you. Quite often, as an employee, we get an employer match, and so or a safe harbor plan where the employer is automatically putting money in whether you do or not. So when people who are working have exposure to those types of plans, they may be better situated to kind of save for their retirement automatically. That's why it takes extra effort by the self-employed people. You have to do it for yourself. So please keep that in mind. Now, the other thing you might want to think about before year end, as you're looking at your own situation, is maybe to review what you missed and how you can plan better next year. So a year-end tax tip is, what did I not get right this year, and what can I do to get it right next year? So review some of these tips that we've talked about tonight, and can any of them apply to you for next year if you weren't able to do them? Now, outside of some of these tax tips, there is also something that quite often comes up this time of year, and that is gifting. And people often will say to me, how much can I gift? And what they really mean is, how much can I gift without having to report any of it? So the IRS does have rules around gifting, that if you gift more than $15,000 to any one individual, you have to report it on a gift tax return, simply to reflect that you've used up some of your lifetime gifting exemption. That lifetime gifting exemption is tied to the lifetime federal estate tax exemption, which is currently $11.7 million. So you got a lot of wiggle room here. So you can gift a lot of money and not pay gift tax on it because you have that huge exemption, but the IRS just wants you to keep track of how much you've gifted over this annual amount, the annual amount being the limit that you don't have to report at all, $15,000. They want you to keep track of anything you're doing in excess of that because you're eating into that lifetime $11.7 million exemption. And by the way, if they lower the federal exemption, you know, you've gifted from that lower exemption as well. It's the same thing. So just keep that in mind. So the annual gifting is $15,000 if you want to gift. Typically, we see people doing this when they're trying to manage their own estate planning. They may want to lower their own estate for federal estate tax purposes, or they may want to lower their estate for state inheritance purposes, such as in Pennsylvania, where we do have an inheritance tax. There are several other states that have inheritance tax, depending on who's inheriting. So, for example, New Jersey has an inheritance tax, but transfers to spouses or children are at zero, whereas in Pennsylvania, transfers to spouses are zero, but transfers to children are 4.5%. So the rates will vary depending on the state, if there's an inheritance tax, and to whom you're transferring assets. But keep in mind that gifting could be used for that, or it could just be out of the graciousness and goodness of your own heart that you want to do some gifting. So sometimes people will talk about what might be some smart gifting, and some smart gifting could be if you have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, or it could even be, you know, yourself. If you're making transfers to a college savings account, a 529 account for those people for qualified education expenses. I'll talk more about that in just a minute when we come back from our halfway mark. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Allentown. The time is now 6:30 and it's 51 with overcast skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to get low 43 and a slight chance of rain. For your Thursday, it's going to be high 60 and cloudy. Thursday night, low around 46. And for your Friday, it's going to be mostly sunny, high 56. Friday night, low around 40. And Saturday is going to be high 48, a chance of rain. And Saturday night, low 34. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Thank you, Shandi and Eric and James, for holding down the fort, and we appreciate listeners. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. To wrap up some of our last-minute year-end tax tips, just to refer back to the 529 for a moment, for people who want to make a contribution, if you're a Pennsylvania resident, it doesn't matter where the plan is. It's just great. We get a deduction on our Pennsylvania return if we're making a contribution to a 529 on the behalf of someone. It's a deduction on our Pennsylvania return, and it can be any plan anywhere in the United States. But the, what I want to mention is if you have a student who is taking distributions from the 529 for qualified education expenses, you want to make sure that you're matching up the distribution for the year of expense. So if I have a student who has $10,000 of expenses this year and I wait, and I write the check ahead of time. I write a check for $10,000 tuition to the school, and I know I have this 529, and I can take a distribution out of the 529 of $10,000. I have to do it in the same year I've had the expenses. We want to match those up. We can't pay the $10,000 in December and then take the $10,000 distribution in January and say it matched. We want to match up the distribution with the expenses in the same year. So keep that in mind. And also, if you don't understand exactly how this works, you do want to make sure that you juggle payments for tuition matched with the distributions from the 529 accounts. You want to be careful if you are someone who would be eligible for the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Don't lock yourself out of that. And let me give you an example. If let's pretend the tuition is $10,000 and there's $5,000 of room and board. So you take $15,000 out of the 529 account. That's eligible. Those are qualified expenses. So $10,000 of tuition, $5,000 room and board. Well, you've reimbursed yourself in full. But if on your tax return your income was below a certain level, and let's say married, file, and joint, it's about 160, there's a phase-out range, and then single and head of household, it's about $80,000. If you're below those thresholds, and you have $4,000 out of pocket for that student, and I'm talking about a four-year degree undergraduate student who had not qualified for this special tax credit before, you would be eligible for an American Opportunity Tax Credit of $4,000. So you don't want to take, of $2,500 with a $4,000 out-of-pocket payment. So in essence, what I would say is you pay $4,000 for tuition. You can take, $11,000 out of the 529 to cover the balance of the tuition and the room and board, so you get that benefit, but the $4,000 out-of-pocket is going to qualify you for an American Opportunity Credit, again, if it's qualified expenses and you're within these income, under the income limits. So just please keep that in mind. You want to really take advantage of all of the education benefits that are available. It makes that much more money available for that child for maybe the later part of their education or maybe for graduate work. So really keep that in mind. Lots of tax benefits there. So if you didn't take care of some of these items before year end, what can you still do in 2022 for 2021? You could still fund traditional IRAs or Roth IRAs by April 15th of 2022 for 2021. And that is, again, for people who qualify for that. So I'm going to run out of time if I go into all the details of that. But typically, that is someone who maybe doesn't have an employer plan, or if you have an employer plan but your income is low enough, or if you have an employer plan but you have a spouse who doesn't have earnings, you could do a spousal IRA. And there's all different limits on that. I can talk about that in January. But you have until April 15th to do that for 2022. So traditional IRAs or Roth IRAs if you're eligible to do that. Some people might do backdoor Roths. That's where you don't qualify for a Roth, but you might not have any other IRAs. You can make a non-deductible contribution to an IRA and then convert it. But that is something that you know, it's a little bit more complicated, and we're not sure that the IRS is going to allow those to continue. They might be out of favor with any new tax legislation that's trying to get through. The other thing is you have self-employed people. Remember I mentioned you could have a solo 401k, set that up by December 31st, but if you miss getting that set up by December 31st, self-employed people can still set up something called a SEP IRA, and you have until the extension due date of the return to do that. We had a question come in from Carolyn in Sailorsburg. Thank you, Carolyn. And her question is there a way to give money to a student to help pay for a student loan, and is there any tax benefit to it? Carolyn, you always ask such great questions. I should mention that there was a recent change to 529 accounts that allow you to take a one-time distribution toward a student loan up to $10,000, I believe. It's fairly new. I haven't had anyone do it yet. I think it's been actually a couple years. It might have gone through with the SECURE Act. So you can make a distribution from a 529 account one time up to $10,000 toward a student loan. That is really a nice advantage. So when you say, can you give someone money to a student to help pay for a student loan, is there a tax benefit? That is one way. You could put money into the 529. You can make a contribution of $10,000 into the 529. You could take a deduction for it if you make it directly to the 529 and then tell that student, hey, let's take $10,000 out to pay it toward a student loan. Otherwise, you're kind of could still fall under those other gift rules I was talking about. If it's under $15,000, you can just make a gift to them, and you just want to make sure if you are gifting cash to them or a check that they indeed put it toward the student loan. But there isn't as much a tax benefit on that other than it's lowering your own estate, you know. But it's just a feel-good thing. So I hope that helps, but I'm glad you mentioned that because the 529s did in recent years change a little bit. They allow you to use 529 money not just for college anymore, but for some trade schools and also for elementary and secondary education up to $10,000 or the cost of tuition for those private schools. So that is a good point. Thank you, Carolyn. Folks have questions, there is still plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So some other things that you can still take care of if you didn't get them taken care of before year end that you can do into April 15th of 2022. I mentioned IRAs, Roth IRAs, self-employed SEPs, and you still can fund a health savings account if you're eligible. Now, to have a health savings account, you have to have a high deductible health plan. This does not typically apply to people who are 65 or over, because they're typically on Medicare, and if you're on Medicare Part A or Part B, you don't qualify for a health savings account. But for people who do qualify for a health savings account, whether it's a single plan or a family plan, you are eligible with that high deductible health plan to fund a health savings account through payroll deduction if you're employed and have it through your employer. You can do it through payroll deduction. That is the best way to do it because you get the best tax advantages that way. It avoids federal, state, local, and Social Security and Medicare tax, at least in Pennsylvania, but definitely for federal, all those savings. And a health savings account, you can do the max. That includes between the employee and the employer. Quite often, employers will put some money into a health savings account for the employee. You cannot go over those maximum amounts. You don't want excess contributions in your health savings account. But here's the thing. A lot of people don't always understand how this works. They go through open enrollment. They say, you know, $50 a paycheck, and at the end of the day, they put in $1,200 for the year, and they only save the taxes on through payroll on $1,200. But you could still get an extra deduction on your tax return with a health savings account additional contribution. You have until April 15th of the next year to do that as well. I have had so many clients who found themselves in this situation deciding to go ahead and put in the extra funding. At a minimum, you're saving it, the tax on the federal level and the state level. You just don't get the payroll tax savings, the Social Security tax and Medicare tax savings when you're doing it direct yourself, not through payroll. Now, there are people who have health savings accounts, high deductible health plans that they own privately, that they're not employed. They might have retired early. They're not on Medicare. You might have your own plan. If you do have a high deductible health plan that qualifies you for a health savings account and maybe you had not checked into it, you didn't want to bother with it, it is a great tax saving tool. You can save a lot of money. Then if you accumulate a decent amount in your health savings account, you actually can invest that money in the health savings account, and it will remain income tax free. All those earnings and growth on the health savings account, if you've invested it, as long as you use it for qualified medical expenses, and you can use that for a long time. And at age 65, there's even some other provisions that you could tap it if needed. But again, a little bit too complicated for me to get through with the time that we have remaining. I do want to talk about what you may need to think about in 2022. And then hopefully by the end of the show, I will talk about getting ready for your tax preparation and some tips to do that as well. So talking about what you may need to think about in 2022, are you going to have any mile markers such as turning age, pay attention, turning age 50, 55, 59 and a half, 62, your Social Security full retirement age 70, 70 and a half, 72? All of these ages have some tax, implication or income implication to you. So you want to pay attention. 2022, are you turning any of these ages? Because your circumstances may fit some corresponding tax benefit for these ages. So I want you to pay attention to that. When we come back from this next break, I will go through what all of those ages mean fairly quickly, and then we'll talk about some other things that could happen in 2022 that could impact your planning. And this is the time to kind of think about them, because as you get ready for your tax preparation, you want to make sure you know what questions to ask your tax preparer. So folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you could also send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Ari Shapiro, host of All Things Considered, reminding you that WDIY runs on member support. Thanks to listeners coming together year after year since 1995 making membership contributions, WDIY has been able to grow into the vital public resource that it is today. All the programs you hear on WDIY are made possible by listeners. From NPR's All Things Considered and Morning Edition, to locally produced programs like Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, HealthBeat, Teen Connect, and public affairs programs you won't find anywhere else in the Lehigh Valley. Now is the time to support your listening during this membership drive. Make your contribution today by visiting WDIY.org or call 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're coming right in at the end of the year here. I want to remind listeners that we actually will not be live the next couple of weeks. We're going to have some pre-recorded shows because I will be out celebrating the holidays and away. So we will have some great pre-recorded shows for you. And that is also a reminder that those shows are available at WDIY.org or at YourFinancialChoices.com and, of course, on the WDIY app as well, at least for the prior 2 weeks. We've been talking about some year-end tax planning tips and, you know, what we need to prepare for next year. And then finally, I will wrap up with getting ready for your tax preparation. So when we talk about what you may need to think about in 2022, I mentioned all these ages. Why are they important? Well, because at age 50, for people in 2022 who are turning age 50, you can increase your contributions to employer plans or to IRAs or Roth IRAs. There is something called the catch-up contribution. So at age 50, you can put in an extra $1,000 into your IRA or 401k, an extra $6,500 on top of the normal employee contribution of $19,500. So that would take it to $26,000. I do believe the dollar amounts all stayed the same. I apologize if they've changed. You know, it's just overwhelming, all these things we need to keep track of and keep in our head. I don't know how you all do it. So you pay attention to if you are turning age 50. At age 55, this might be important for people who are terminating employment in 2022 by maybe your own choice or by not your choice if you're early retired or, you know, given a package of some sort, then that is at age 55. If you terminate from employment, you want to be careful because if you're someone who has a retirement account at work and you've terminated that you'll be age 55 by December 31st in that year, you could tap your 401k without a 10% penalty. So there's something called an early distribution, 10% early distribution penalty. If you take money out of a retirement account pre-age 59 and a half, that applies to IRAs, but there's a special provision for 401ks if you've terminated employment and have turned 55 in that year. So that would be very important for people to know if you find yourself in those circumstances. I hate when people, you know, roll over that money and then they don't get another job and then they're really stuck and they have to take money out of their IRA and then it's potentially subject to a 10% penalty unless some other exception applies. So 55 is another age to keep in mind. Age 59 and a half, that's when the early withdrawal penalty goes away, so that's always good to know. No 10% penalty on an early withdrawal from your IRA or your 401k. Age 62, that's our Social Security early retirement age, although you do take a haircut by filing at age 62. You take a permanent haircut on your Social Security if you file at 62, but you may have those circumstances where, you know, it's a must. You may not have other income and you just have to, or maybe you don't have longevity and everyone in the family kicks off at age 65, so this is your chance to grab some of that money you worked hard to earn. So early Social Security, 62. If you're a widow, the age is 60. And that's, you know, without having children. There's other rules around that. So age 60 for a widow without, you know, dependent children. Full retirement age, Social Security, you can, at full retirement age, you can collect Social Security and still work without having to pay back any Social Security. If you collect Social Security prior to full retirement age, then you have to pay back some. So it's like a dollar for every $2 over a cap of like $18,000 something. So at full retirement age, you don't have to pay back that money. Age 70 is the maximum age for Social Security, so they let you defer collecting Social Security until age 70, and in doing so, you get basically an 8% premium each year for waiting beyond full retirement age. It's a great way to build up that benefit for yourself or for a spouse, because a surviving spouse steps into the higher benefit of the two. So that is age 70. These are important ages. Age 70 and a half was the old required minimum distribution age, but what they did not change, which has now been changed to 72, but what they did not change was the age for qualified charitable distributions, which is still age 70 and a half, as I discussed earlier. And age 72 is now the new required minimum distribution age, not age 72 and a half. I hear people say that all the time. Oh, 72 and a half? No, the old age was 70 and a half. The new age is 72. And the IRS does give us until April 1st of the year after we turn that age, but then you would have to take two distributions in that year. So we typically don't do that unless for tax planning that makes sense. Required minimum distributions for inherited IRAs ongoing pre-2020 were based on life expectancy, but since the SECURE Act of December 2019, they have accelerated non-spouse beneficiary distributions to 10 years unless you're a special designated beneficiary. Changes in dependents or filing status. So remember, we're talking about what you need to think about for 2022. You could have a change in dependents or filing status. Maybe you're going to have a child, and there is something called a child tax credit, and maybe in the past you weren't eligible because you didn't have any kids, and now you might be. Well, you know, currently in 2021, they were doing advanced child credit payments to people. Remember, that's going to hit you on your tax return. You're not going to be ready for it, so watch out for that for 2021. But for 2022, you may there may be a tool on the IRS's website that if you now have a dependent child in 2022, you might be able to go in and let them know if you didn't have one before, and you could be eligible for that advance credit if that is something you need. If you don't get the advance credit, of course, you would still have the opportunity to get that child credit on your tax return as we traditionally have done, you know, for a very long time. So that impacts the child tax credit. You may have dependent care credits. You want to make sure that you are aware of all of those various kind of credits that are available to you. Also keep in mind that if you are employed and there is a flexible spending account for dependent care, and you didn't have it before, or maybe you added another child, you have had a change in circumstances. And typically, once we've done open enrollment, we can't really change our mind on too many things. But if we have a change in circumstances, we can notify our employer whether we've lost a job or a spouse got a job, if we need to change that flexible spending for dependent care credit. That is a great advantage, because you do get a tax, it's pre-tax, you know, it's saving you taxes by putting money into a flexible spending account. Typically, we might think of that for medical expenses, but it's also for dependent care expenses. And then there's also a dependent care credit on the tax return if your expenses exceed that $5,000 that we can put in a flexible spending account. We can still get a dependent care credit on our tax return if we exceed that $5,000 or if we weren't eligible for a dependent care flexible spending account. You also, for 2022, want to review funding retirement savings, check your contributions, do you need to up them, that type of thing. So with the last few minutes I have left, getting ready for your tax preparation, you know, it just makes sense to set up a file to gather the information. You want to make sure that you keep any information marked important tax information enclosed. It is a legal requirement that anyone sending you a tax document has to put on the outside of the envelope important tax information enclosed. So you take those envelopes, you throw them in your folder. You also want to grab a copy of your prior year tax return because you want to know what to expect or what not to expect. You know, like, are you waiting for your dividend statement from your ABC stock? Or, wait a minute, I put my ABC stock in my brokerage account, so I'm not going to have that 1099 anymore. So are you watching for the information that was on your return in the prior year, or did something change and just make a note of it? So grab your prior return to see that. You also can use your prior return to do your planning, too, and I've talked about that on a number of shows, using the tax return to do planning. To me, the tax return tells a complete story. I think it was last week I did the show on the financial planning elements with some storytelling. I love storytelling. It helps us remember things. Well, your tax return is a story to me. So looking at your tax return, what is it saying about you? How well you save? How well you invest? What is your risk tolerance? Are you working? Are you putting money in your 401k? It tells a good story. So you can look at that and kind of use your return for planning. Now, I want to make sure that also for people who have, you know, turned everything over to online accounts, you may not get the paper documents. So I have had situations where people used to bring in all their tax documents. Now they do everything electronically, and they forget to give us some of those tax documents. You have to keep in mind, if you have waived paper, you might have to go into that website, that online account, and download your 1099 or your W-2 if your employer requires you to do it that way. You may have to download those, and you can transmit those electronically, maybe to your tax preparer, or you might have to print it off and give it to your tax preparer, or put it in an electronic folder if you do your own tax return, and then when you're doing your tax return, you pull up that electronic folder and make sure you go through each of those documents that you have. If you have cost basis in an IRA or you've been doing a Roth conversion over the years, you want to make sure you're keeping track of that information, and you do that using the form 8606. That tracks the information for any cost basis in IRAs, and that's important on eventual distributions from those IRAs because they wouldn't be 100% taxable if you had cost basis. The reason we want to track Roth conversions is because if at any time you decide to take a distribution from your Roth and it's maybe too early or too soon, to the extent you have basis in that Roth, then of course you wouldn't pay tax on your original contributions. Ordinarily, earnings on Roths aren't taxable if it's a qualified distribution. I'm only talking about distributions that are not qualified. Make sure you keep your receipts for your charitable giving. If you have done charitable giving, if it's $250 or more, the charity should have acknowledged it in print. Quite often they acknowledge anything because they want to, you know, always get in front of you. So keep track of that. And also just make sure that your tax preparer is aware of any planning that you might need to do for next year. Folks, thanks so much for listening tonight. I really appreciate it. The next 2 weeks, as I mentioned, we will have a pre-recorded show as we're out celebrating the holidays. We will be back on January 5th when we will discuss more planning opportunities. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Again, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, James Johnson. I really appreciate your efforts and help tonight. today. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and happy holidays, everyone.